We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Impress your friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'ma tell you what you need to know. I'ma tell you what you need to hear.
Fourth quarter of the program begins right now. We finish strong here in the program. Alec Lewis to join us here shortly. Royals insider from The Athletic. We'll talk about the big news of the day. We're going to hear from John Sherman, owner of the Royals, Dayton Moore, president of the Royals, and J.J. Piccolo, now the seventh general manager in Royals history, here in a minute. First, some news coming from Adam Schefter. Adam Schefter reporting that Eric Bieniemy is emerging as a candidate, a strong candidate, for the USC coaching job. He cites comments from Bieniemy in the past saying that USC, Eric Bieniemy being from Southern California, is a job that he would consider. So not that he's headed there, not that it's his job, just that he's emerging as a candidate for that gig.
And the one connection to it is he once worked for the current AD at USC, whose now name I'm now blanking on.
Yes. His name is, just say it fast.
Short name.
Yeah, short name.
Barg Barg, yeah. As I once said.
Yes. So there's a history there. It's a job that he has said he would have interest in the past. And so we'll see. It seems like if you're going to make this move that quick, maybe looking to have him come now. Not going to name him now and wait 18, 19, perhaps, well, 19 games, I guess, if they won the division. But potentially 20 if they're not a bye team. 20 weeks to start the gig? I would think that that's something that if he's going, he's going now, right?
Mike Bohn.
Is he bad to the bone?
It's B-O-H-N, but I think it sounds that
still
way.
Still works. Still Absolutely. Works for me. So we'll get to a couple other football notes, one even involving the Chiefs and their coaching staff, or at least the NFLPA's request. We'll get to that in a minute. First, let's hear from the owner of the Kansas City Royals talking today. He announced that Dayton Moore would be moved to president of the operation and J.J. Piccolo, general manager. John Sherman said part of the decision was continual interest other franchises have shown in J.J. Piccolo.
Keeping J.J. here is strategic to this franchise. I don't know if it's been an annual event, but I've certainly been here when other teams have inquired and asked permission to talk to JJ about becoming a general manager at another team. If that opportunity came, we certainly would have supported him doing it. But this is a much, much better result for the Kansas City Royals.
So they'd kicked the tires on him, but not offered yet. Because he said, listen, if he'd been offered, we would have let him go. We wouldn't have stood in his way, right? That's the one thing that I think's of note. But you get the sense that they feel like they're gonna kick the tires and they're gonna offer this offseason.
Yep.
So I think that factors into the equation of why they went ahead and made that move now. Dayton Moore, now president of the Kansas City Royals, said the time was finally right for this kind of reorganization.
This structure has been presented a few different times. And truthfully, it just wasn't one that personally I was ready to embrace for a number of reasons. But the more I sought counsel, spoke to some of my colleagues that have a similar structure, and I believe over half of the major league organizations today have this structure in place. But as I began to evaluate our personnel, the different skill sets that exist within this front office, and by the way, the core group of this front office has been together longer than anybody in baseball. And so, but as we began to have discussions and lay out the different roles and how we can achieve sustained success as John desires, our fan base desires, and certainly we aspire to, it became very, very clear that this was the structure that made the most sense.
The structure, having him as the president and, you know, pulling him out of some of the day-to-day operations. Like, I don't think you're going to see there'll be no more meetings about who the lineup is or who's coming up from Omaha if somebody's going on the DL. That now becomes the territory of J.J. Pecola, is my assumption. These are my words, not theirs. There weren't details made. Well, let me give you an example. I used to do this. Now he'll do that, right? That wasn't laid out there in those many terms. J.J. Pecola was asked how the job would change. The new GM said the duties will change with the new job.
I think the focus obviously becomes a little bit more heavy on the major league team. You know, I'm typically here in Kansas City when the team's at home. Past years, you know, really going back to 2019 now, when the club was away, I would go watch our minor league clubs. I hope I still get a chance to do that. But, as Dayton has said, he'll be out seeing the clubs. We have other people that can see the clubs. I have to be laser focused on what's happening at the major league level and with our staff, with our players, with our major league scouts, our professional scouts, anything that's happened in development. But I got to focus on the major league club, and I look forward to that challenge. I'm excited about it. But as far as I think you might have said lifestyle, I don't think the lifestyle is going to change a whole lot. I mean, you just work. It's just whatever you're asked to be, you do your best job at that job. And that's just something I've always believed in.
So more of a, the beginning of that, the meat of it, more of a major league role, right? And I think that's what it speaks to. And I get the sense, in having spoken, this has been in the works, I think, for the better part of, as Dayton said, it's been talked about for a little while, probably since at least John Sherman came on board, right, that there was a discussion about it. But I think they feel like, one, the ball club is in place to where he can, the talent level is such that he can relinquish some of the day-to-day duties and focus on the big picture side of things, right? I think that's one of the big things John Sherman talked about, is called it executive level decisions. Dayton Moore can focus more on executive level decisions. I think some of that will be the minor league operations. Not necessarily are we going to change this hitting coach for that hitting coach, or do we want an uppercut swing with this player? No, I think more big picture of which minor league team and which minor league coaching crew, different things of that nature. I don't really know, but I think he's still, the one thing that's very clear is that he's still going to be involved very heavily. Any idea that this is now him just moving into semi-retirement with a figurehead role, to me, was ended when I asked with the second question, Dayton Moore, who will be the one, whether it's a trade, some kind of big move for the organization. It's always a group. It's always a committee conversation, right? But at the end of the day, somebody's got to ultimately turn it. It ultimately lands on someone's desk. I asked him, is that going to be you, or is that going to be J.J. Pecola?
We'll all work together on that, as we mentioned, but ultimately, I've got to make the final decision, the final authority with what works well or what doesn't. And that being said, I think you know how I operate. I'm not a micromanager. We allow people to do their jobs. I'm going to trust J.J., to make those decisions. We'll all work together. It is very collaborative, as it always has been. And I think that the uniqueness of this relationship is we've all worked together for so long. And so it's ultimately going to be something that I have to come to grips with, whether we make a trade or what have you. But Lonnie Goldberg will tell you, JJ will tell you, in working through many of the decisions that we've had to make through the years, Renee Francisco and others, I ask a lot of questions, validate judgment, substantiate judgment. There's no question that you could ever ask me, or John Sherman could ever ask me, that I haven't asked of JJ, Lonnie, Scott Sharp, Renee Francisco multiple times in many different ways. And that's how we've always made decisions. We don't make decisions in a vacuum. We work together. And every once in a while, someone has to press that leadership button and say, the tie is now broken. And I'll be the one to ultimately have to do that.
Hope he does it that way, too. The tie is now broken.
And he has a gavel. Pulls a gavel out and bangs it on the desk.
Dayton, stop it, please.
The Yeah, I think he's still very much hands-on. The just day-to-day minutiae, not going to be on his desk. I think that's where this will be. I'd liken it to the role that Theo Epstein played with the Cubs, that Billy Beane has played with the A's, beyond general manager. And I think it lightens his load as far as, you know, you're going to do a ribbon cutting somewhere, J.J. Piccolo will be there.
Yep.
I mean, I think it lightens his load on some of the PR side of things as well. Maybe not. Maybe it opens his role up to be more of that. Maybe it'll be the other way, that his decisions are ones that, for the most part, he's a guy that you come to when there's issues. Otherwise, he's free to be out and be more the face of the organization. I don't think it's a coincidence that at the same time, John Sherman decided he was going to confirm rumors that they're looking at downtown, right? Because I think Dayton Moore may play a role in that as well. Big picture item is like, where will the Royals play baseball in the future? John Sherman was very deferential about, you know, hey, Kauffman's been great, a lot of great memories. Didn't say unequivocally we're out,
no.
Right? So we're exploring the idea, looking at it, right? He was asked by Sam Mellinger, why he is making public statements about downtown baseball at this time.
Frankly, it's hard to not go public with this. I get asked this literally everywhere I go, even more than when Bobby Witt's going to come up to the major league team. So we're having some thoughts about it. I think we want to be more transparent on how we're thinking about it, begin that discussion, and start to get feedback from the various groups in the community as how they feel about the concept. And then how we can, the criteria that I gave, community impact, economic growth, and quality of life for people in this region, if we can make that work and the math works, you know, it's certainly a possibility for the future.
Like hearing that, quality of life, the economic impact mm-hmm. for people in this region, reminds me a lot of a guy named Cliff Illig. If you remember a conversation we had a couple of weeks ago where Cliff talked about what the impact of having the World Cup in Kansas City would do. And, you know, having an obligation to the city, you know, and to this region. And, you know, it's not just about generating revenue, but also it's about making the city better, right? And the things that could do. I thought that was interesting. I believe John Sherman and Cliff Illig are friends. I know they know each other, but I believe they're friends. And it doesn't shock me. They seem to be cut kind of from the same cloth when it comes to understanding that they are, you know, they play a big role in this city, and they want to make sure they do right by the city, by the metropolitan area. And it was great to hear John Sherman say that. And I love what he said. Like, look, if we're going to be doing our due diligence on this, this is getting out anyway.
Yep.
Right. So we might as well be transparent about it.
Yes, that was a big word.
He also got to it first before the Chiefs did. Not that it's a competition. And I don't expect the Chiefs to hold a press conference next week to say, we're looking at all options as well.
Mark Donovan talks tomorrow at 2.
Yeah, but I expect, it's clear, this to me, I likened it, I was talking to Nate Bucati and I said, I liken this to like a starter's pistol being put in the air and fired. This is the beginning. And we've talked about it for a couple of years. I said, it's going to come much sooner than you think. 31 is when it's got to be done. It's going to take a few years to build it. At the very latest, we're talking 24, 25. Nope, we're talking now. And I think this is smart, gives them time to get things done, get it in order, take their time, do their due diligence, get people on board with what the vision ends up being. But I do think it's of note the Royals were first to come forward, and the Royals have gone about it in a transparent way. Will the Chiefs go about it the same way? As of right now, they're tied at the hip. The city operates. Whatever one gets, the other gets. So the gun's been fired on the Chiefs as well. Where will the Chiefs go? The Royals are making it very clear. We're looking at all options. Will the Chiefs make that clear as well?
Probably not as clear.
You know, I think their timeline would be the offseason. I don't think you need to start talking stadiums right when you're getting off the ground with your season. But you know, sometime February, March, April, May,
now,
June, July.
They will have.
I think a year from now they will have commented about what they're thinking and what kind of preparation they're doing for that potential. We will talk to Alec Lewis more about this subject here in a second. A couple of nuggets I want to get to you. First of all, what was the one I wanted? Ryan Braun, 2011 MVP. He is calling it quits. He is retiring today. The New Orleans Saints have 8 members of their organization that have tested positive for COVID-19. 6 coaches Not sure if their what their status for Sunday's game against the Panthers is going to be. The total has six coaches, one player, and a nutritionist, according to a source. That would seemingly a skeleton crew of coaches, but I assume since the players, at least right now, are good to go, would seem to mean that the game should move on. And speaking of COVID, the Bills announcing that at least one shot for everybody who enters their game, starting with September 26th, you have to at least have begun the vaccination process. At least one shot for everybody, 12 and older, starting with the September 26th game. By the October 31st game against the Dolphins, full vaccination for the Buffalo Bills. That'll be interesting. The fans have to be fully vaccinated. There are some players in Buffalo quite adamant they ain't getting vaccinated. So we'll see how that subject plays out. A loss already on the agenda. Let's see what Cole Beasley has to say now. You know he's going to be asked about it. Yep. Buffalo will probably hide him and try to keep him from the media. We'll see if he can keep himself from social media for very long. Let's talk to Alec Lewis next.
The program with Soren Petro.
He is not a journalist in the normal sense of the word. He's a columnist. And he's a person who dispenses opinion.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. As a boy growing up in Alabama, he dreamed of going to school at Missouri. Really?
What? I'll be deep in the cold, cold ground before I recognize Missouri.
Okay. Now he covers the Royals. He's Alec Lewis of The Athletic on the program.
Let's talk some Royals baseball. Big news today coming out about the Kansas City Royals. We turn to our Royals insider from The Athletic. As you heard, his name is Alec Lewis. He's brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing. Joe Spiker and his great team can take care of you and your roofing needs like he took care of me and my roofing needs. We thought we were headed to a big re-roofing. Turns out we only needed a little repair. Reality is they educate you on every possible option, not just coming in like some out-of-town guy, some carpet-bagging roof company, knocking on doors after a storm. Easton Roofing lives here, locally owned and operated, family-owned and operated. No payment collected until you're 100% satisfied. That's my guy Joe Spiker and Easton Roofing. Call him today if you've got any roofing, guttering, insulation needs, 913-257-5426 online. At EastonRoofing.com. Easton Roofing, integrity matters. Alec, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, Seren. I'm good. I thought we would be talking about Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce's performance on Sunday. So to have news is solid.
I'm happy
to talk about it.
So you're saying there's nothing to talk about the ball club on the field? Thank God they made a front office move?
I didn't say those words, and I don't appreciate you putting words in my mouth, but... I can definitely tell you that news, them providing that for me, helps for the interest of what we're doing. Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. So, Alec, your big insight into the world of hot dog buns at minor league parks will have to wait. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, the profile on the concession stand worker at Arvis Ballpark in Springdale is still going to be in the works.
Okay. I look forward to that. At least I know there's quality content coming very soon with my athletic subscription, the athletic subscription.
Always.
I don't think this is stunning. I think if you covered the team, there's been kind of a sense that a move upward for Dayton Moore was coming. But I think some people were kind of surprised at his answer to my question. I think some people thought he was almost moving into semi-retirement. And I never got that sense. So when he said, yeah, I'm the guy who will make the final call on the big moves, trade specifically was what I was asking him about. He said ultimately, you know, hey, it's a group decision, but ultimately somebody, if there's, you know, a tie to be broken, has to be somebody, and I will be that guy. That surprised some people. It didn't surprise me. Did it surprise you?
No. I mean, this structure and this having a president of baseball ops and then a GM as well, I mean, this is, I think, as they said today, I mean, this structure is now used by like half the league. I think Jerry DePoto in Seattle just got bumped up to this title that Dayton now has last week or 2 weeks ago. So to me, it's more of a title adjustment. I'm sure there's a pay raise involved. I'm sure that it will eliminate any possibility that either one of these guys gets poached by another organization. And so that Dayton Moore, in his new role as president of baseball ops, is going to make the final decision, being that he's done that for the last 15 years, was not surprising, no.
How do you think the role changes? You know, we didn't get a lot of details. I don't know that they know. I'm sure it's still somewhat of a fluid situation. But how do you think Dayton's role changes? What J.J. Pacola becomes the general manager and takes on what new duties? Dayton Moore gives up what duties? Maybe what new duties is Dayton Moore going to take on?
Yeah, I think really the most change will come with just the day-to-day activities of the big league club. Like, I don't know how many people know, but I mean, Dayton Moore over the past 15 years, I guess, has woken up at 5, 6 in the morning and gets a call from Nick Kinney, the trainer. They go through kind of the what's going on, if they need to make decisions, who they need to talk to for travel. And it's just a day-to-day, all-day-long kind of nonstop activity from the GM trying to get everything in order. And so I think a lot of those duties will probably now fall to JJ, and I think Dayton will kind of work more macro and be able to bounce around. I mean, he mentioned how many people are in the baseball ops department and how he kind of wants to be able to bridge a communication gap with some of the people they don't often get to spend time with. So I assume he'll do a lot of scouting. I believe he'll head down to the Dominican Republic, and I'm sure he'll have a pretty active role alongside Rene Francisco in some of the scouting that they do down there. And then I think just in general, he'll be able to kind of, I mean, he, I think over these years, as this game has evolved, it's just gotten so, it's just become such a minute by minute, second by second thing. And as Dayton will always say, I mean, he got into this for the relationships with the people. And so I think him being able to kind of dip his toe in whatever activities he can that involves the people and relationship building and kind of communication will be his task. And I think JJ will focus so primarily on just the big league club day to day, along with Scott Sharp.
So who handles JJ Piccolo's minor league duties then?
Yeah, he was asked that, I believe, in a sense, and I don't know if it was Dayton was asked or JJ was asked, and there were a few names mentioned. There's Alex Zumwalt, who's currently been the director of hitting performance. There's Nick Relic, who's on the staff, and Malcolm Culver, another staffer. But it's a good question. I don't think as of this very minute it's been totally finalized. I don't know if they'll shift roles from that standpoint, but I wouldn't. I mean, truthfully, Seren, I wouldn't be shocked to see Alex Zumwalt step into more of a just director of player performance for all of the minor league development. And then maybe Drew Saylor, who's been the hitting coordinator, might direct hitting performance. I don't know that. This is purely speculation for me, but I wouldn't be shocked because Alex Zumwalt's been in the organization for a long time. And he obviously has kind of spearheaded the hitting development revamping that has produced really good returns in the last 2 years.
John Sherman said, you know, he has been there in each of the last couple of years. There have been people calling and asking about J.J. Piccolo. Then he added, we would never hold him back from taking another job, which means if we connect those two things, people call, but nobody offered. And that the, you know, the interest in J.J. Piccolo was part of the decision-making on this side of things. Do you think this year he would have gotten the offer had the Royals not given him this position?
I think it's certainly possible. And I mean, we've known, I don't know how widely reported or what have you it is, but I believe this past offseason, J.J. interviewed for the general manager job with the Angels. I believe in the past he's interviewed with the Phillies maybe a couple times. I believe he was in the mix as well with the Astros. I should probably fact check that on a more severe level, but I think it's certainly possible. I mean, he, given what the minor league system has done this year, although the big league club's record is what it is and has been what it has been, he's been in charge of the minor league system, and they've had an incredible year down there. And so I think as certain openings exist, and I think about like the Mets specifically potentially, and then wanting someone who could communicate, who has a really good track record as a human being as well as an executive, I think there was certainly a chance that could have happened, no doubt about it.
I guess I'll ask just, do you like this move? Do you think it's good overall?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think, like I said, I don't think it's some earth-shattering thing, but I do think, I mean, if J.J. Piccolo, like I said, has been really influential, and as John Sherman said, in kind of the modernization of the club, he really has. I mean, I remember sitting down with him in the fall of 2019 in the Arizona complex. We sat there in the lunchroom for like 30 minutes. He and I talked through the new hitting development structure and how the hiring process of that went and how that was different than the hiring process before and how he was open to doing things different. And we talked about edgertronic cameras and Rap Soto and some of that stuff that I think the Royals were a little late on, but now including their development system, and he was huge in that. And so to have a guy like that in this role, and a guy, I mean, with Dayton being the president of baseball ops, having a guy that he can trust, I think that's positive. I think that's a positive thing for the organization. I do.
We're talking right now with Alec Lewis from The Athletic. The other big announcement came at the end, and it, too, like you said, not earth-shattering, but at least transparent, that they are exploring all options as far as where they'll go with a ballpark in the future. You know, you're probably, I don't know, you would have been about 10 when we went through the renovations.
Yeah.
You know, deal. And so I know you weren't, and you weren't even in this state or either one of these two states. So the arguments and the fights that went on before the renovations, the vote took place and then ultimately happened is history to you. No doubt. I know you do your homework.
Sure.
And you've read up about it and that kind of stuff, but you know, it was a fight. And I thought this is a great sign of, you know, and he even used the word transparency, right? Like, you're not going to go out and start talking to people about sites and locations and to cities about what they would do tax-wise or infrastructure, areas of town, and think that you're going to keep that a secret. So why not let everybody know what's going on? That, to me,
exactly,
is just being mature, which is refreshing because so oftentimes huge mega corporations like the Kansas City Royals don't operate in mature manners. Like, I thought that was very refreshing today. Do you agree?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, part of it too is like when stuff starts to leak. So, like you said, say they go and talk to city planners or e-commerce, whoever, and leaks they happen. Then people are skeptical. They're just naturally skeptical, and I think oftentimes people should be naturally skeptical of big corporations, and so for them, to your point, to just come out and say, like, this is our plan, this is on our mind, this is kind of what we're thinking, that we are going to go through an internal process to find the best approach, is at least, to your point, I agree with you, it's a start. I mean, it really is. I think it's the very beginning of what will be a very long process. And obviously, I mean, for them, they want to buy as much public trust as possible in this situation. So I think that's part of it. But I, like you said, I agree with you. I think I thought that was a good start. It was an interesting little thing for them to do at this time.
All options seem to be on the table to hear John Sherman talk about it. And he didn't spend a lot of time talking about it. But they took a handful of questions and that was it. Mike Swanson cut it off and basically said, look, that's all the questions you could possibly have. I'll be the judge of that, Mike. But I actually didn't have any more. He was right when it came to me. But I'm sure there are a few people that might have had some more questions. But I thought they did a nice job of answering everyone. I think a good solid 50 minutes is about all you need to do. Otherwise, you sit there and answer questions for 3 hours. But do you get a sense from what you've heard? You know, John Sherman said, you know, we're doing our due diligence and, you know, kind of made it sound, hey, Kauffman's on the table. We're going to look at downtown. I know a lot of people have talked about, hey, does it really have to be downtown if you leave Kauffman Stadium? The Braves went to the suburbs. And I've heard some people kick around the idea that, hey, a large portion of your ticket base is in Johnson County. Is there a place in Johnson County? Or would KCK out by the racetrack be an idea? Do you think this is about doing their due diligence on any and all possible options? Or is downtown where it's headed and it's just about where downtown?
It's a good question, and I don't have a reported answer to that. But I would think, I mean, truth be told, I would think it's all options on the table. Because I think I think they would be doing, knowing John Sherman, because I've talked to him multiple times at an extensive level, I mean, I think he wants to hear from people. And that could be any type of, like you mentioned, city leader from Jackson, could be anybody on what they have to offer and why why they think that aligns, and he'll listen. And I think obviously from a monetary perspective, factor that in and they'll think about it. But I mean, we've known, I mean, going back to when they announced this ownership group and I believe Jay Dunn Construction was on that, ownership group list. That was the very first day of this announced ownership group. And so this is a, I mean, this isn't something that just randomly popped up. I know for the last 2 years, it's something that has, it's just on the table as an idea and as something that is going to be a priority, obviously, when the lease comes up at the end of the decade.
I'm quite confident John Sherman absolutely cares about what's best for the city, the entire metro area. But also, yeah. I'm quite sure that by making this announcement, you pretty much just said, come make me your offers, right? I'm not going to just sit and negotiate with Jackson County, right? Like they talked about downtown. He mentioned it. He seemed to me, in my opinion, you know, really all he talked about was Kauffman and downtown, which would be Jackson County, would be Kansas City, Missouri, would be the state of Missouri, the three entities that flip the bill for everything right now. But by saying this and by saying, hey, it's the quality of life and it's what's best for the town and everything, you're certainly putting the word out there to KCK as well, to Johnson County. If you're going to make a pitch, the time to make it's now, right?
Right. And that's another element, I think, of I mean, as we talked about, like, why would you come out and do this now? I mean, what is the impetus for that? And I think, like we mentioned, I think one is obviously you don't want it to leak and then have questions after the fact of, like, what's going on? What are you guys doing? And have the skepticism. But I think to that most recent point, that's another reason why you do this now, is because you obviously know that there is benefit to gain from folks hearing you and realizing that, okay, if we want to do something, let's get together. We've got to figure this out. I think and you leverage it because others know that others are trying to figure it out as well. So I think just holistically, I think there's multiple benefits from their perspective as doing this today, which I think is why they did.
Alec Lewis is back on his tin can and string as he talks to us here in the program.
I'm out on the concourse. There was a guy with a trash can beeping. I mean, I'm trying to get the best. I'm on the move. I'm trying to put you guys in the best.
Well, it's not working.
You're failing miserably.
Yeah. You know what you should do? Find the spot that you sound good when you talk to Jed, and then stay there.
Oh, he didn't sound good when I got him on the phone. He said he was trying to find a good spot. And I said, Alec, you're the best. And he is trying in his defense. He's just failing.
He is trying. It is the fifth month of the season, is it not?
It is. But, I mean, there's only so many places to go. I mean, if I go out to the field level, there's going to be music. And then if I'm on the top, there's staffers up here doing their jobs respectfully, and I'm trying to be respectful of them. It's just not easy. I'm trying, though.
Is it true you are under the crown? You know, David Lesky's inside the crown. You're under the crown.
Yeah.
In a vault.
I'm out here now by the Hot Corner Grill in right field. I'm doing my best.
Okay, let's talk a little bit of baseball here in the program as Alec Lewis is with us. Andrew Benintendi was the player of the week. There's 1 year left on his deal. If you get to the final year of a player's deal, I think a player should always play it out and get to free agency. Do we see that this strong finish from Andrew Benintendi should be the precursor to some kind of extension being put together for him in the offseason?
I certainly think it's possible. I mean, I think if you looked at this club and asked who were the two likeliest extension candidates who kind of had dwindling contracts, I think early in the season it would have been Carlos Santana and Andrew Benintendi. But the way Carlos Santana has played down the stretch, I think eliminates him. And I think you're obviously looking at Andrew Benintendi. He had an interesting year. I talked to him last week and just talked about that. I mean, every time he started to feel good, he's gotten hurt. But truth is, we talked about with Monacy 100 times, you got to be available and just not and being hurt doesn't really cover for the fact that you were that you struggled after you were hurt. So I think it's a possibility. I think his ability to hit is just it's true. I don't think it's a fluke. He's gotten back to his swing path as we've talked about. And I think it's paid dividends when he's been healthy and gotten in a rhythm.
Has Monacy gotten back to his swing path, and that's why in the last eight games his slash line is 111, 143, and 222?
How happy are you to read those numbers?
I'm not happy at all. I'm really not. But I just, you know, I do get worn out by the people that as soon as he has one good game or two good games or the 10-game stretch and they're ready to declare that he's Fernando Tatis, that does wear me out.
Yeah, no, I understand. And look, I mean, I know Keith Law has come on to you guys' show a ton. And he's talked about the swing and miss issues that have persisted from going back to when Alberto Mondesi was a young minor leaguer. And those still exist. I mean, he doesn't walk, and I mean, it seems like he's very, he's just so streaky because his play discipline doesn't really exist. So it's one of those things, like when he's going good, you can ride it, but when he's not, it looks like the way it's looked. And so I understand people who have frustrations in a time like this because it's just so inconsistent when it's even available.
Yeah, that is the frustration there. But that's who he is. Like, I'm not down on him. He's always going to be streaky. It's the red hot streaks with the ice cold streaks. Same thing with Carlos Santana. Like, it's not, we shouldn't be stunned when he has an ice cold streak. You know?
Yeah. No, I don't think so at all, especially at this age. I mean, I think that he's always been streaky. But at this age, there's only so much you can expect. And so I think with Mondesi, I think that's why. I mean, you with knowing his swing and miss issues, and you had the shortstop defense, that's why some could kind of live with that. But I mean, when he's not playing defensively at shortstop and he's not hitting the ball at his premier rate, which happens so rarely, it's you just start to, I don't know,
it's easy to kind of question and wonder and
then yell at your TV.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, enjoy what he is. Right? When he's red hot, he's red hot. He's a ton of fun, and he can carry your club. When he's ice cold, this is why there are eight other guys in the lineup. They got to do their job. And, you know, just know what he is and build your club accordingly. Don't build your club thinking this is the guy that's going to, you know, bat two or three because he's going to be two up and down, I think, to be batting in that spot. I think he looks a little bit better lower in the lineup, and the sooner the Royals can fill in the lineup above him, the better they will be as a ball club. Pitching-wise, Jackson Coar goes tonight. Where do we sit on which Jackson Coar we're going to see this evening?
If I could tell you, I'd make some money for some people, but I have no idea. It's just when he's commanded his fastball, it can go well, but it's just at the big league level, it's been really hard for him on a consistent basis, and when that's the case, and then you just start to get antsy, and then the changeup's everywhere. And he's got this new slider, which has actually been a really good pitch for him. And that was that's a development win, I think, for the Royals pitching development department because it just plays better with his stuff. But it's not a development win when he can't command his fastball because he just has no chance. But we talk about it a lot. It's kind of a boring little answer, commanding the fastball. Like it really kind of puts even me to sleep. But it's just the truth of what's important for him and
Alec Lewis is boring not only himself but you as well as fans here in the program right now. It's really boring. Is that where we are? Is that where we are with the club right now? They're just boring.
I mean, I think I'm excited to see Jackson Coar pitch tonight, but I mean it's also been my job and I've followed the arc, so I understand that. I think Carlos Hernandez, when he's pitched, I think that's got to be really fun for people. I think Daniel Lynch at times is the same way. I think there's parts of this lineup. If you really love baseball, you've got to love watching Whit Merrifield and Nicky Lopez play every day. But, I mean, I'm not going to lie about it. Like, the team's out of the playoff race, and we're down the final stretch, and the Chiefs are what they are. So, I mean, we can't lie about it, can we?
No. I mean, I don't think we need to lie about it. How good of overall the organization that now is, you know, still the final say is going to be Dayton Moore, now president, but J.J. Pecola, now general manager. How good of a situation is he rolling into, right? We can talk about, the young talent. Is this a prime club to be taking over right now if you're J.J. Pecola?
I think so, and I just think that because of the farm system, I think that which is in part has been his job. I mean, if you look at what MJ Melendez continues to do, it's absurd. Obviously, Bobby Witt Jr. is what he is. Nick Prado continued to succeed, and there are more pitchers coming down the pipeline. So, yeah, I think it is.
I think that's just so important.
I mean, to have young pitching and to have young players developing, I think if you're in that type of situation, you have hope, and then it's just kind of a matter of how it plays out. But I think so. I think with where they're positioned, it's solid. It's just all going to hinge on these young players performing to a level at which they need them to perform.
Yeah, and now it's J.J. Pecola's fault on when Bobby Witt Jr. doesn't come up, right?
Sure, you can scream at him. If it's not me, I don't mind. I think
this has been a collective decision going all the way back. So I think we're to the point where we can push that to next year, and as spring training dawns, the fans will attempt to make that happen right out of spring training, as they should.
We're talking to Alec Lewis from The Athletic. Time for our Final Four, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System has extended weekday hours and a Saturday morning walk-in clinic. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Alec, I'll start you with this. On a scale of 1 to 10, how ready are you for the season to end?
I said I wasn't going to lie. I will put it at an 8.
Eight it is. Okay. Who starts in center field on opening day, 22?
Wow. That's a great question. I wish I could answer it in new. I don't know. I think they're going to try to make a trade for somebody out there. I think that's the way. I don't have a name. Like, it would be great if you could sign Starling Marte, but he's just, I mean, taking the Brinks try. He leaves every game with more money in his pocket with how well he's played. But I think a trade for some, maybe like Jaren Duran, the young Red Sox prospect. I don't know if you could acquire him, what that would take, but, man, that would be beneficial.
So I'm going to put down Duran as the answer. You kind of stumbled out there. It's the definitive nature with the way you answer that is just makes it so powerful.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, you bet. Does Alabama lose a game this year?
No. It's just the most well of oiled machine.
Okay. All right. So put you down.
Definitive. There you go.
That was definitive, the first one, by the way. All right, and finally, where do the Royals play in 2035? Where is their home ballpark? Where specifically? Don't be a smartass and say Kansas City.
Dad would have done that.
It's an intersection.
Unbelievable.
Curtis will slap the taste right out of your mouth if you try to get cute on this one.
No, downtown, I think. For this game to maintain popularity among people around my age, I think it just has to be centrally located.
What
in
intersection?
What address?
People in Kansas City, 73rd and True. Like, I don't know.
73rd and True.
Where do you live? 43rd and State. I don't know where that is. I just moved. Like, I have no idea. So I don't know that. Where is downtown? 22nd and in Maine, like I don't even know.
I know 73rd and Troost is not
73rd and Troost. If that's how you're revitalizing downtown for the young people, you're in trouble.
No, I just use that as like, oh, where do you live in Kansas City? Oh, I live on 48th. Like, how do I know 48 versus 49? Doesn't matter. It's a grid. I know. I've heard it.
Don't live in southern Manhattan.
I'm putting you down for 73rd and Troost.
Avoid KCK if you're confused by number grids. Yeah. You won't know what direction you're facing.
It's not hard. The numbers going up means you're going south. Not in KCK. I was talking about where Alec lives.
I'm so frustrated. Everybody in Kansas City asks that question, where do you live? And I answer Westport, and it's like, I don't know what street. I don't even know.
Do you get bills? Like... Have you gotten a piece of mail? Have you gotten something that says current resident?
I live on a street that doesn't have a number, which is how most typically go in my life. I don't know.
Does it have a name then?
It does. I'm not giving my street name out on here.
Why? It's a whole street. You don't own the entire street.
It's not that big of a street.
What is it?
No.
Do you really think you're that big a deal that people are going to seek you out?
No.
So you live on the little, you live on that street that comes out by the Quick Trip there on Westport Road?
Yeah, right near that, the worst intersection in the history of intersections.
Yeah, because that's where the only 43rd streets that are really short. Yeah.
Oh, don't give it
right
away,
there.
Curtis. God, what are we going to do now?
See, Curtis said 43rd and Main. Like, he knows it off the back of his grid in his head.
I know what that Quick Trip is.
Yeah, that's what adults do. They figure out where things are.
This has been great.
Yeah, it's been fun for us. I'm glad you've enjoyed it.
You've been a good sport.
We will let you, get back over to the blender or whatever was going on earlier. Alec, great stuff. We encourage everybody to go to The Athletic, where you have a complete breakdown on how to use the Maps feature on an iPhone. And, of course, great stuff on the Royals as well, my friend.
Thank you, Seren. I really appreciate you guys. You guys are the best.
I think you mean that, too. I really think Alec Lewis means that. He knows we're the best. That was from the heart, Curtis.
I think it was. I get choked up there at the end. Maybe it was the fumes. I don't know
how.
In the parking lot that he's in right now.
By the way, Easton Roofing knows where you are. The entire metro area. They were proud to bring that segment of Alec Lewis's. Even in Topeka and Lawrence, that's part of their part of the metro area for them. Check them out, EastonRoofing.com. I don't know how. We'll come back with the kicker and try to top that.
Due to circumstances beyond our control, we now present
The Program with Seren Petro. Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On The Program.
But first, the Jazz End of the Hour answer. What was the last time the AFC West went 4-0 in Week 1? It goes back to the first year of the four-team AFC West. No, not 1970. 2002.
2002, last time, all 4-1-0. Mm-hmm. Is this going to be the best division in the AFC, do you think?
Could be.
Cleveland lost, Baltimore
could
lost.
Have the highest floor and the best team, but in the middle level, there may be three teams that are stuck around that 9 and
I think the AFC East,
rate.
Pats, Dolphins, Bills, and I think the Jets might be saltier than people think. I think that might be up there, but this one's pretty good. The Raiders ought to be good by now under John Gruden. They've got a quarterback who can, play pretty good football. Broncos have a very complete roster. The Chargers have a really good young quarterback.
The Chiefs go 6-0 this year. They will have earned it.
They will have earned it. No doubt about it. They will have earned it. All right, we want to thank everybody for helping us out here today in the program. Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus, Tim Grunhard with us, and, of course, even Alec Lewis, a man from parts unknown, joining us here to talk some Royals baseball. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.